The court will proceed to the third case of the day, the United States versus Wilson. Mr. Gillespie.
Yes, good morning, Your Honors. For the record, Mike Gillespie on behalf of the appellant, Mr. Wilson. As the court is well aware, it is the appellant's position in this matter, first, that the evidence that was presented by the government in this case in no way supports the verdict that was rendered by the jury. It is our position, Your Honors, that the evidence was illogical, inconsistent, and, in fact, contradicted by the government's own witnesses. Specifically, the evidence that was presented consisted mainly of the testimony of two Chicago police officers, an officer Dobek and an officer Hall. And, of course, by way of history, Mr. Wilson was convicted of the charge of a felon being in possession of a firearm, and the only element, I suppose, that was in dispute was whether or not the government had proved that he possessed the firearm in question. There is no question that, in fact, as of the date of the arrest, he was a convicted felon as of January 1st, 2006, and there is no question that the firearm in question did, in fact, travel through interstate commerce. But again, it's the element of possession that we are disputing. And when you look at the evidence, Your Honors, you have the testimony of two police officers who, from the very onset of what they saw, they contradict one another. You have observations as it relates to possession that are being made very late at night. It was dark outside, and down halfway down an alley where the officers initially dispute or contradict each other as to what they initially saw. One of the officers says they saw two people on the back porch. Another officer says three people on the back porch. They contradict each other as to what they see in relation to the firearm itself, as to whether it was in front of this individual, whether it was on the side of the individual. They contradict each other as to...
All of these things were brought to the attention of the jury, were they not?
Yes, they were.
We're talking about a credibility finding, then.
Yes, sir. I would agree with the court in that, and I would respectfully submit that the jury just, in fact, got it wrong. And based upon the evidence...
That's an interesting observation. You're swimming upstream again, you know.
I understand that, but it's our position that the evidence that was presented to the jury, that it was that in no way a rational trier of fact could have made the finding that they did. And most importantly, I think when you're dealing with the observations that are made by these police officers as to the possession itself, possession of the firearm purportedly by Mr. Wilson as to how it gets to the box in which the firearm is found, one of the officers has Wilson throwing the firearm in a box behind him. Another officer who's there right next to him has it throwing to a box that's in front of him.
Gollies, that's a significant blow.
I would say so, Your Honor. So,
but there's no question that they both testified they saw him standing outside holding a gun and chased him through the house. And then saw him drop the gun.
That is what they...
Right. I mean, I'm just saying that was consistent.
That was consistent.
Right.
But I think the court has to look at the inconsistencies when making a determination as to whether or not that testimony could amount to proof beyond a reasonable doubt. And it would be our position that it's the inconsistencies that answer that question in an overwhelming no, that it could not. In addition, the physical evidence, it is our position, did not support the finding. There were no fingerprints that were found on the gun or the bullets that were in a pocket of the coat that Mr. Wilson was wearing that supports that finding. In fact, the fingerprints that were found on the bullets in the coat belonged to somebody else. They didn't belong to Mr. Wilson. And you take that evidence and look at it in comparison to what the defense witnesses testified to, specifically that no one saw Mr. Wilson with the gun. In fact, there was the testimony of Mr. Whitehead, who said that, in fact, it was his gun, and he, in fact, had put that gun in that box. In addition, we believe that there were three procedural errors that were made, evidentiary rulings that were made that were incorrect, that did not allow for a fair outcome in this matter. First and foremost, it's our position that the introduction of the fact that Mr. Wilson was in fact in a gang, or was at one point in his life in a gang, completely tainted the jury. And it, even if the argument could be made that it might have been relevant, though I don't think it was, but if the argument is to be made that it was relevant and that it shows some sort of bias of the witness, Mr. Whitehead, I think it's clear that any relevance that that evidence may have had is completely outweighed by the prejudicial effect of gang membership. I know there was, in fact, a limiting instruction given in this matter, and I know the court instructed the jury on how they were to perceive that. But it's our position that that bell cannot be unrung once a jury is told that a man who was on trial for being in possession of a gun, in addition, he's a gang member. That is too big of a burden to overcome, and we believe that it should not have been allowed. In addition to the additional rulings as it relates to, one, the inability to cross-examine the police officers on other OPS complaints that they had filed against them, and secondly, as it relates to the inability to impeach the officers by omission as to a report that was prepared by the case agent in this matter. So based upon all that, Your Honors, we ask that the trial court's verdict be reversed and the matter be remanded.
Thank you, Mr. Gillespie. Ms. Hudson.
May it please the court, Nathalina Hudson on behalf of the United States, representing the appellee in this case. Your Honors, there was sufficient evidence in the trial court for the jury to conclude that the defendant knowingly possessed the gun. The jurors heard testimony from officers Dobeck and Hall, and they testified consistently that they saw the defendant standing on the back porch with a gun in his right hand. They also testified that the defendant ran into the house with the gun in his right hand, and the officers were able to see the defendant running in the house with the gun in his right hand. The officers also consistently testified that the defendant was standing at the front door with the gun in his right hand, trying to get out of the door, trying to open the door with his left hand. And the officers consistently testified that the defendant threw the gun into a box that was located close to the door. The officers also testified that the defendant was searched, and after the search was conducted, they found that the defendant was wearing a jacket with 7 live bullets in the pocket. The officers also recovered a gun, and the officers testified that the gun, that the bullets in the gun matched the 7 live bullets found in the defendant's coat pocket. In addition to hearing from, in addition to the officer's testimony regarding the search, Officer Dobeck testified that the defendant, after being Mirandized, admitted that the gun was his. In fact, the defendant stated that it was New Year's Eve, and it was the defendant's first New Year's out of prison, and he just wanted to shoot a gun. And after making this statement to Officer Dobeck, the defendant again admitted that the gun was his. And he admitted this when he was at the police station. He admitted this during an interview with Officers Dobeck and Officer Hall. Not only did the jurors hear from Officers Dobeck and Hall, the jurors also heard from a non-law enforcement witness, Shirley Coleman. Shirley Coleman testified that she has known the defendant for 34 years. She lived across the street from the defendant, and she knew his mother, and they were friends. And Ms. Coleman testified that she was only testifying as a result of being subpoenaed. And when asked, you don't want to be here today, Ms. Coleman testified, I sure don't. And Ms. Coleman testified that although she wasn't present during the New Year's Eve party that took place at her house, 6 months after the incident, Ms. Coleman talked to the defendant in the privacy of her bedroom. And it was during that time that the defendant apologized to Ms. Coleman. And he told Ms. Coleman that the police knew that it was his gun because the bullets were in his pocket.
Now, so I understand your position that there was plenty of evidence to convict him. I wanted to just ask some questions about this gang affiliation, because in light of all this testimony in the cross-examination of Whitehead, it came out the government cross-examined him on this gang membership. Why was that testimony necessary or relevant? I can understand a gang affiliation might show that somebody might protect another gang member, but here Whitehead said the gun was his, and he implicated himself. I mean, I just don't understand that necessarily that was relevant.
Your Honor, the defendant's gang membership was relevant because Mr. Whitehead took the stand and testified that the gun was his, and that he told the officers while at the in the house that the gun was his, but they didn't arrest him. And the Mr. Whitehead also testified that after this incident, he tried to notify law enforcement that the gun was actually his by sending a letter to the defendant's mother. And there was a stipulation that was entered into evidence, in which the defendant's attorney, along with the government attorneys, basically saying that they had not received any information from Mr. Whitehead regarding him taking responsibility for this. And it was important for the jury to understand why an individual who was already in prison would take the rap for this other individual. He was the main witness for the defense.
But didn't it also come out that Whitehead had been a lifelong friend of Wilson?
Yes.
I mean, that's separate and apart from the gang affiliation, so that certainly provided some motive.
Yes.
That provided some motive. Was there any evidence that Whitehead had a lower position in the gang than Wilson or something else that would explain why he would harm himself to protect his friend?
No, Your Honor, that evidence was not in the record. But what was in the record was that the defendants joined the same gang. They were a part of the Four Corner Hustlers. Mr. Whitehead testified that he made all of these statements while the officers were in the house, yet he did not notify anyone about taking responsibility for the gun. And given the probative value of the information to show motive and bias on the part of Whitehead, the probative value substantially outweighed any unfair prejudice to the defendant. With respect to the citizen complaints, the trial court did not abuse its discretion in denying defendant's motion to use citizen complaints to cross-examine officers Dobeck and Hall. The citizen complaints were just that, mere allegations. The officers denied the allegations in the complaint. Therefore, the defendant's attorney would not have been able to use extrinsic evidence to prove the allegations in the complaints. Since the complaints filed against the officers would not have been admissible under Rule 608B of the Federal Rules of Evidence to cross-examine the officers for truthfulness, and the defendant would not have been able to prove the allegations through the use of extrinsic evidence, the district court did not abuse its discretion and granted the government's motion to exclude the use of citizen complaints to cross-examine the officers.
Was Whitehead in custody when he testified at the trial?
Yes.
He was. And how long had he been in custody?
Your Honor, I'm
okay.
Not sure.
Okay. But sometime he was taken into custody sometime after this incident, according to his testimony.
Yes.
Okay.
With respect to the last point that the defendant's attorney raised, the district court did not err in precluding the defendant from impeaching officers Hall and Dobeck through Special Agent Agent Padilla's testimony on collateral matters. Officer Dobeck, with respect to Officer Dobeck's testimony, the defendant's attorney did not confront Officer Dobeck regarding whether or not Officer Dobek snuck up on the porch or whether Officer Dobek saw two individuals standing on the back porch of 319 North Lotus. Under the federal rules of evidence, under federal rule evidence 1613B, since the defendant's counsel did not confront Dobek as to what he did or did not tell Agent Padilla regarding these issues, Dobek never had an opportunity to explain any alleged inconsistent statements he made to Agent Padilla. Accordingly, defendant's counsel was correctly precluded from using Agent Padilla to impeach Dobek regarding these statements. With respect to defendant's attorney's ability to cross-examine Agent Padilla, with respect to Officer Hall's testimony, the district court precluded any line of questioning with respect to Officer Hall, but if Agent Padilla would have testified that Hall did make those statements to Agent Padilla, then the defendant's attorney would have been precluded from perfecting the impeachment. Defendant's counsel asked Officer Hall if he had told Agent Padilla that he saw a man with a white T-shirt standing on the back porch. And Hall responded that he did not recall if he told Agent Padilla that. Defendant's counsel also confronted Hall regarding whether or not the men standing on the porch were staring down at a weapon for a number of seconds. So once Agent Padilla affirmed what Officer Hall said, the perfection of the impeachment would have concluded. The defendant's attorney would have tried to impeach Agent Padilla on the fact that he did not include those statements in the report. And those omissions, that the impeachment of Agent Padilla was collateral, because the only reason the omissions would have been coming in would be to contradict Agent Padilla. Therefore, in light of all the overwhelming evidence in this case, the government respectfully requests that this court affirm the defendant's conviction.
Thank you, Ms. Felton. Mr. Gillespie.
Very briefly, Your Honor, court had brought up, as it relates again to the gang affiliation, it was brought out on cross-examination that Mr. Whitehead was a lifelong friend of the defendant's, Mr. Wilson's in this case, which would clearly, the government could have argued, goes towards motive or bias as to an explanation as to why he would subject himself to additional charges being brought forth here. Clearly, Mr. Whitehead was a felon as well. He had opened himself up to the charge of the same charge that Mr. Wilson was facing at the time that Mr. Whitehead was on the stand. However, so the fact that they were in the same gang was, again, it would be my position and the defense position that it wasn't relevant, but it was purely cumulative if it was going to show that a bias in this matter.
Was Whitehead under any indictment at the time he testified? Were there any charges against him?
No. Mr. Whitehead was serving a sentence on a separate matter.
How long a sentence?
It was my recollection that he had a year and a half left on approximately a 4-year sentence. So he was in custody at the time. So thank you for your time this morning.
Thank you, Mr. Gillespie. Thanks to both counsel. Mr. Gillespie, you have the additional thanks to the court for accepting this appointment and ably representing Mr. Wilson.
Thank you.
Here, here.